The Hale Varsity Radio Saturday Morning Show. Strap yourselves in. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt.
Y'all don't even know he was a virgin until he's 28, and now, roll tide.
And Mark Kranak.
Time has come for someone to put his foot down. And that foot is me.
Welcome to it. Weekend editions here. It's Hale Varsity Radio. We're presented by Currency for all your equipment financing needs. Go Currency. Chris Schmidt, Elijah Herbel, Mark Kranak in his Husker den, or dare I say living room. Hopefully you're doing all right this morning. And a lot of buzz about Nebraska and recruiting. A trip down to Arizona by 9 assistants. Basketball on our mind. Of course, Nebraska, Maryland. Husker baseball got to be outdoors yesterday. And a big matchup down at Arrowhead with the AFC Championship game. We'll cover all of it here this morning on Hale Varsity. Numbers to get in, 466-3776, 800-825-5865. Can watch the show as well as hear it every Saturday morning, 7 to 9 on ESPN Lincoln. But if you're bumping around, great on the radio. If you're on your phone or tablet, ESPN Lincoln Facebook, ESPN Lincoln Twitter, the Hale Varsity YouTube channel, and always follow us with Hale Varsity Radio on Twitter at HVarsity Radio. Chris Schmidt at Schmidt underscore radio, Elijah Herbel at Herbal Essence. Someday, Mark Kranak we'll return to at Mark Skurs on Twitter. Fellas, good to see you this morning. How are we doing?
I like your green hoodie today, man. That is awesome.
Thank you. It's a dark shade of green. Actually, it's a Christmas gift from our friends at Alpha. This is Black Shirt Black. Elijah's got more of the Hunter Green going, but that's a beautiful purple bill you have going. I didn't know you flipped over to K-State.
I don't know if it's – and this is blue, by the way.
Yeah, is there some kind of bit that we're going on here? Mark goes, love the green sweatshirt, and Schmitty goes, it's black. And Schmitty goes, I love the purple hat, and it's blue.
I know.
There's some bit that's going right over my head.
Colorblindness this morning.
Yeah. That's our new thing. That's our new thing, I guess. Anybody still excited about Husker hoops? I feel bad.
No, we're not.
No, I legitimately feel bad for Fred Hoiberg. Like, he brought in some dogs. He brought in some defensive guys. Gary and Bandamel will D you up, man. They are good. They're good defensively. And they're just hurt. And they're not going to play. And so Fred's going to get rolled again. And it's like, damn. Again. You know, it's going to happen again. They're going to get rolled again. They can't. Come on. They're not doing anything the rest of the year.
No,
I'm gonna call that right now. Sorry.
So they lose out. Is that where you're going? Because it's highly probable.
Well, they gonna win out. I'll tell you that. that much is pretty obvious. But they just can't get a break. They can't get a break. And I don't know what that. I mean, what does that do for Fred? He hasn't won at all here. Right, like
no, but at least you see
best year.
You've seen a change in
500 still.
You've seen a change in behavior, though, right? You've seen a change in behavior, and I think that's step one. And if you're Nebraska, and this fan base likes this team, they're as hard to watch offensively as any team he's had, but it's a different hard to watch. They just can't make shots. It's not for lack of effort or selfishness. That's plagued his previous three teams. They didn't give a damn on defense, and they were pretty selfish on offense. This year, they try and share the ball. They just can't throw it in the ocean from a boat a lot of times, right? I mean,
which is kind of the sport, you know? It's kind of the
I know you got to make make shots. If I'm Trev,
he's good at football. He just doesn't really know how to tackle anybody like to tackle. Or run with it.
He didn't like contact.
Well, I know. It's like, that's kind of football, man. Oh, he's good. He's good at soccer. He just can't really kick that.
No, he's just got two left feet. I mean, you know, it's what it is. Now
you can't score in hoops, man.
Well, and the thing is, it's like it's a Fred Hoiberg coach basketball team too. Like all Husker fans are expecting like 90 plus point performances from Fred Hoiberg teams, and he got hired. Now we're 4 years down the road, and it was, well, we had to adjust. We had to go defensive for the Big Ten, and we're yet to put together a squad that actually looks like they have a competent offense.
Which makes you wonder, like, those Iowa State teams, did he just, like, stumble into some really good players? And
well, he had NBA guys. He had two to three NBA guys. Now, his system works. They just have not found personnel to execute it. And at least he shifted to a defensive mindset, a little tribute to Doc Sadler. I mean, that's what Husker basketball's resembled this year, where they – travel the defense, and that's kept them in a lot of ball games. They outgrit you, which Nebraska fans will take. Listen, if I'm Trev, listen, my waistline would be great and I'd be in incredible shape. But from a thought process, if I'm Trev, I'm like, look, he's not.
I like how you fat shamed yourself.
I look like a giant green vegetable in this sweatshirt.
you do.
But no, I mean, you've seen the change, and I think you have, look, Gary can come back. You've got Jamarcus that I think has a lot of upside. I know it's one game, 4-for-8 from 3-point land. And then you got Denham Dawson. I mean, you have, and then Breidenbach, you have some pieces on this roster. Yeah. What's their jump projection like next year? No idea. But you don't want to risk that. And you really totally want to reset. I know it's tough to watch. I know it could be even more draining if they win one or two more games. Yeah. But I think you have to take into context the situation and acknowledge that he shifted it. I think you have him take another pay cut or say, hey, we want to keep you around. But Fred's down to
22 bucks an hour.
Yeah, Fred's
like McDonald's Fred's, employees in California.
Fred's down to 100 and a half a year. I'm kidding. But no, I think about Fred right now where he's at. You leave Iowa State for the NBA, you go to the NBA and it's nothing but injuries there.
Yeah.
And then you land in Nebraska as this, oh wow, we got Fred. And it's not worked out. And you had missteps and you relied on the wrong information, which was your call with Abdel Massey and how they went about building a roster. Talent, yes, but buy-in, no. And you've changed that. So give me another year, no matter how bad it hurts, towards the end of this year with Fred. That's where I'm at.
I mean, it's reasonable, but I think you should see how the rest of the year unfolds too. Are you still feeling that way if not saying it will happen, but look, Northwestern kind of pulled away from Nebraska. I mean, it's like a couple years in a row.
Northwestern's a bubble / NCAA tournament team this year, though.
Well, yeah. A bubble team, not Duke, right? Like no. they're a bubble team. And they,
that's better. It's better than past Northwestern teams drilling you by 13 at home.
But what I'm saying is that's been happening, right? Like Northwestern has rolled up on the set under Hoiberg and just drilled you, like whatever your roster looks like. You're like, okay, that's not great. That maybe should be better. I get it for this year, and you do feel bad because I do feel like he pieced together a team that, you know, was kind of playing ball like most Husker fans would hope they would. Which is you rebound, together. You play some defense, yeah. You're unselfish. You move the ball. You just give yourself a chance, basically. And look when their starting five was there, which the starting five did not play together a lot this year. They probably missed half their games with each other around there, mm-hmm. with Walker being out early, right? With Griesel missing some time, between Gary, Griesel, Walker. And Bandamel, and then I guess who would be? Oh, Kata's missed a bunch of time, mm-hmm. right? Like the team has just had horrible luck health wise this year, and I bet you Trev's going to take that into account, and I think we all should too. But at the same time,
it's year four. You shouldn't reliant on, well, you know, point. It didn't happen this year because of injury. Where were the previous 3 years? Well,
And you wonder if, like, is this just part of Fred's trajectory? Like, a bunch of things are entering my mind here. So if you're Trev, are you like, you heard what he said about what he wants in a football coach, which I'm assuming that's what he wants at all coaches, right? He wants grinders, you know, people that are really getting after it, people that have a real defined kind of way about how they want to go about winning. And that way needs to resonate and reflect Nebraska, right? Which is, you know, probably for basketball, defense, rebounding, and, you know, great. If you figure out some way to score, it doesn't have to be threes. It doesn't have to be, you know, but it's defense and rebounding primarily, I think, is what would resonate the best here. So, like, is Fred a grinder? I don't know that answer, but is this more a situation like a Bo Pelini, where Bo, super promising, had some incredible years, right? Did some really good things. But then at some point, his career just kind of,
I see it more like a Bill Callahan situation, Mark, where it's no one doubts that Bill Callahan is a very, very bright football mind. No one doubts that Fred Hoiberg is a very smart basketball mind. The question with Callahan was he a fit for Nebraska? And after a couple of years, we all kind of saw, you know what? No, this is not the Nebraska style that we want to play football. And that's, I think, the question with Hoiberg right now is no one doubts how smart he is as a basketball mind, and no one doubts that he's a good basketball coach. The question right now is, 4 years in, have we seen anything that's shown that he's a fit for Nebraska? And by year four, the one thing that you saw that could have been a fit was the fact that he adapted how he wants to play basketball in order to make it fit the Big Ten. But the detractor is, you know what? It took him 3 years to realize what it's going to take to win in the Big Ten. It took him years to figure out what his roster needs to be to win in the Big Ten. And you sit here and you go, is that a guy who deserves to get another year? Maybe. Because with Callahan, he continued playing his system. But Hoiberg is, you know, flipping up to a more Big Ten-esque system. And the question is another year going to get him across the line, or is it just time to cut your losses and find a guy who's a better fit for Nebraska? And that's the question that Trev's going to have to wrestle with over the next month and a half or so.
I think Fred showed that he's able to fit stylistically into the league. Yeah. He just has to do better at building depth and getting more execution. If it was still the same 3-on-3 type offense and no defense with minimal toughness, then it's not even a question, you move on. But he's shown that he's able and willing to change.
But
that's the biggest thing for me. I don't know that it's going to be optically anything to, I mean, there's nothing.
There is the buyout.
Sure. Well,
there is the buyout. That's a real factor here, right? Like, there, is he going to drop another 10 mil or whatever it is for someone not to coach here? Like, where's my check? I'll do that. That's cool.
Sure. And Matthew chimes in a couple of thoughts. Fred's never finished in the top half of the league, obviously. Tim was at least fifth before he got whacked. And there's just a reality of what Nebraska basketball's been, and it doesn't have to be like that. Do you eject, or do you give him a little bit more time? And I side on time. And also, you look at just what's being spent here on athletics. I mean, you've just rehauled football. Do you give it a little more time and let that buyout mark decrease by another season and give him a fifth season?
Well, I think the question is, can Fred Hoiberg build or continue to build a roster that's Big Ten centered? Because there's four guys.
I think so. I think he can.
There's four guys on the roster this season that I think that are ready made for the Big Ten. You look at Griesel, you look at Walker, Gary, and Bandemil. You had four guys that at least fit what you need to be in the Big Ten. You lost half of those guys. And you sit here and you go, why is there not more than four guys on a roster by year four that fit the mold you need to be in for the Big Ten? But the question is with as fluid as rosters can be in college basketball and the modern college athletics, can he turn that around and can he get that number higher than four next season? That's the question that Trev has to wrestle with.
I think Denham Dawson also shows potential to be one of those guys.
He's not there. He's not 100% there yet, but yes.
Yeah, he's kind of wild offensively, obviously, but he's solid defensively. He's very athletic. I can see him being a, you know, 7 point, 6 rebound type dude by the time he's a junior, right? Maybe getting a couple steals and just being that, you know, making the dives on the floor, that kind of guy, right? So I can see him being one of those. Jamarcus Lawrence, jury's still out. I think he's playing a little earlier than he would have expected. Ramel Lloyd's redshirting, don't really know. Tominaga is kind of this random X factor that thinks
keeps
he won the national title.
He won the national title
after every bucket. I love it.
Someone's going to put him into a backboard. I mean, they're just going to – someone's going to finally lose it come Big Ten tournament time, and some giant down in the paint is going to just take him out going to the rim.
Well, it
might be an official. I don't know yet.
You know, what's funny about the basketball team, too, and just about the state of basketball at Nebraska is like – dude, there seriously is no excuse of why you can't get it done there. I don't even want to hear. I'm not entertaining that discussion anymore, because all you have to do is look 50 miles up the road. Right, so don't give me, oh, nobody wants to play in the middle of the country. Creighton's having no problem pulling in some dudes and playing in the Big East and competing. And
how about Kansas State a year later?
Yeah, K-State, Iowa State, right? Like, so everybody around Nebraska has figured it out. Right, but Nebraska somehow is, you know, precluded from having a successful basketball team. That's, come on. And I think in the past you might be able to say, well, the commitment wasn't there, and that might have been true. Your facilities weren't as good. That's not the case anymore. Your facilities are top notch, upper echelon, top 50 probably, maybe higher than that in terms of the practice facility plus Pinnacle Bank Arena. So facilities isn't a problem. Right. Overall, like, sort of money isn't a problem. Competing in the Big Ten, that's not a problem. Right. It's like, don't give me that. You're paying for, I mean, Hoiberg's not like bottom of the barrel in terms of salary. It's all there. Well, you know, you got to have a coach and a vision, and you got to be able to put it all together.
Well, you still have high name value with your head coach. Yeah. Well, I mean, he's respected around the college and pro basketball world. It just needs to be delivered on court.
Well, guys, the problem you have, just quickly before I know you want to flip to football, is that you're always going to have the reciprocal problem of what Kentucky has. Kentucky, you know, with the football team, you always live in the shadow of the basketball team. It's the opposite at Nebraska. No matter what recruit you bring in here, no matter what coach you bring in here to Nebraska, you're always going to live in the shadow of the football team. And I think that's, when you talk about a potential Husker basketball curse, that's got to be a huge factor that we're talking about here. The fact that you're never going to be the number one thing on campus, no matter how good that Husker basketball team is, you're never going to be the number one thing on campus. And that's a problem you're always going to have to deal with just as you look at this Husker basketball team as a whole.
I don't think you use it as a problem. You use it as a solution. I mean, Tim Miles was great with some of the higher profile recruits. I mean, I think that sold Roby. When he made his visit, it might have been that Miami game in 2014. You bring the recruits in September to a football atmosphere, and then kind of show them what basketball can be as well. And to your point, Mark, the facilities is not an issue. Don says Danny Nee. Danny Nee had in-state talent that's been incredible. That's been high level.
Nebraska's got that now.
Yes, that's been high level,
you know,
in the state for a while, but you never keep anybody here. So you got to fix all of that. So football, and it's been pretty fascinating to see two different parts of the Nebraska football recruiting machine do their work. Matt Rhule, the last couple of days, touring the 500-mile radius, the rest of his staff down in Chandler, Arizona. We spent a lot of time on Dylan Raiola, and the prospect and excitement for Nebraska legitimately in the Raiola sweepstakes, not only because of Uncle Donnie, but just because of what Matt Rhule's vision is, his ability to connect, and the priority that he's made not only Raiola, but the rest of the state. Social media has been great this week, detailing that Coach Foley and his van down by the river have visited 100 high schools in the state of Nebraska already. It's one thing to say, hey, we want to keep everybody here. We want Nebraska to be all in together. But they've put their words into action this whole recruiting cycle. And you get the state as one big community. And it makes people feel good, but it really gets the fan base, the local kids, and, of course, the high school coaches excited when they're included. They feel part of the solution here to get Nebraska football back up and running. And it's been really awesome to see. You have a lot of excitement, a lot of juice going on, and just brilliant by Nebraska to continue to prioritize Riola, but also prioritize big and small high school coaches across the state.
Yeah, and it's a good thing too, because I think Matt Rhule's style of recruiting, it's fairly similar to what T.O. used to like to do too.
Milt and Dan Young too, yeah.
Where you really prioritize athleticism, like explosive athletic traits of some sort. Elijah, I think you were talking about this last weekend, where it's just like, you know, somebody that's got 40-plus inch hops really gets on their radar. Somebody who runs 10.5 or below really gets on the radar. Somebody that's 6'7 and, like, I don't know, is super twitchy and quick gets a. If you have some sort of superior athletic gift, whether or not you have all the numbers in football, whether or not you're in a 1,000-yard receiver or five, they kind of don't worry about that. They're looking for kind of athletic freaks. And T.O., that's an underrated thing about what T.O. and company did. They absolutely did compete for and get highly recruited guys like the Peter brothers, like Frazier, like, you know, Amand, like Crouch. They definitely got those guys that were super highly recruited. It's not like they shied away from that. But they also brought in dudes, and this wasn't T.O.'s years, but they brought in, you know, think about like Matt O'Hanlon. Think about like Scott Shanley. Think about guys that, and this kind of gets back to touring the state, right? Going to all 100 high schools. Like, where are some of those guys at? You know, Shanley was playing, you know, 8-man football. O'Hanlon played for Bellevue East and only started for a year or so. But those dudes were uber athletic, and they ended up being guys, right? They ended up being people you could really count on. Think about the Makovicas, right? Those guys were weight room animals, incredible strength. And so they got brought in. Think about like a Terry Keneally. Like, you know, he wasn't a super highly recruited guy, but his frame was, yeah, you can get this dude up to 290 and he'll still be able to move. Well, so that's the benefit of touring all these high schools, even if they don't have necessarily some sort of bona fide camp circuit superstar. If they got some dudes out there that like maybe runs a 10.8, maybe has 40 inch hops, maybe has a frame that could carry 260 and run a 4.6, right? To me, that's what they're looking for as they head out across the state.
Well, and it's mentality they're looking for as well, on top of the athleticism. You mentioned Hyannis and Terry Keneally. You saw rip before rip, right? You go get a rancher from Western Nebraska, give him a mouthpiece and tell him to go murder people on the offensive line. And it works out well, and that kind of permeates a position group. Matthew Braz says Keneally out there raising bulls. But no, it's a mentality, and to your point about the athleticism and finding guys that are twitchy and fast and have track speed, think about the competition mindset you have to have when you're out there running the race, trying to win, right? Get across that finish line, or you're a wrestler, or listen, you're a dual sport standout, but man, you really like football. So no, I mean, Nebraska's done a really solid job of profiling. They've got a niche where it's going to be fast, but it's also going to be tough. And Kranak, Elijah and I have exhausted the Dylan Raiola the last 24 hours. I want to get your take and reaction. If you were to kind of gauge it here, is it just good feels right now that Nebraska's getting publicity off of the investment and connection, or do you feel pretty good that Nebraska is actually a consideration? I mean, based on what Dad has said and the connection, I absolutely believe Nebraska is a consideration. And great story by Brady Altman's too. I want you to read with HaleVarsity.com just where Nebraska is in that four-team race right now for a commitment.
Yeah, Nebraska's in as good a position as they could be. I don't know. It's tough to know anymore. Put it this way. If he doesn't make it, if he doesn't commit to Nebraska right away, it's still not over.
Thank you.
Right? You know, and even if he commits to Georgia and goes to Georgia, it's still not over. That's the thing with the transfer portal era now, where it's just not over. Clearly, Matt Rhule and company have made an impression on Dylan Raiola and Dominic, importantly, right? Have made a real impression on them. But if you're sitting there, you're the number one quarterback recruit in the entire country, and you're looking at your kind of couple options right now. Look, jury's still out to a degree with Nebraska. You know, people-wise, they're legit. You know, support-wise, they're legit. You know, their plan is solid.
You just don't know how soon it's going to happen. Yeah,
yeah. There's no results yet. You know, your offensive line kind of still what it is. Of course, you have an uncle. You have your uncle there just being like, hey, Donovan, you're going to get these dudes right? You're not going to let your nephew get killed, are you? Like, you know, so there's that extra motivation, I guess. But look, even if he goes to Georgia, they're going to have other five stars on campus. He could easily finish second or third on the depth chart and be like, I'm out. Hey, Matt, you still got a spot for me? Right? And then cool. Transfer over. So even if he doesn't commit, I wouldn't lose sleep over it. I think in the past, you lose sleep over things like that. But anymore, you don't. You don't worry about it.
And also, let's remember, Nebraska hires Matt Rhule, what was that, November 29th? Was that when it became official? And then 2 weeks later, Dylan Raiola decommits from Ohio State. So you talk about like the interest with Rhule and with Nebraska, it's got to be real. And I know Ohio State started recruiting another quarterback during that time as well, and it sounds like that left Raiola unhappy. But you also got to think from Ohio State's point of view whenever they see, oh, Matt Rhule's getting hired at Nebraska. I don't know how safe we feel about a guy like Dylan Raiola anymore. We know how much Dylan and his family covet Nebraska, and now they're bringing in a new coach, and we know how hard Matt Rhule recruits. Let's go talk to another quarterback just to be safe. And then Raiola decommits. You look at that, and there's something there. And yeah. I'm not no recruiting insider, but if you look at it from the inside, you got to think, or from the outside, I should say, you got to think Nebraska's in the driver's seat here, just with reading tea leaves and with social media posts and with how much the Raiola family, as I said, covets the University of Nebraska. You got to think Nebraska's in the driver's seat.
Well, think about what a game changer at quarterback could be and would be. Nebraska's missed on some of those over the past years, one of those being Joe Burrow. Mm. Joe Burrow back in the AFC title game, another chance at a Super Bowl. Former Nebraska quarterback Zach Taylor spearheading bar tours to celebrate and deliver game balls. Our conversation with a proud papa of Joe Burrow, Jimmy Burrow, ahead of the AFC title game tomorrow. That's the Rewind. It's next. Hail Varsity continues. Weekend edition presented by Currency.
Like what you hear? High-quality radio and podcasts are just part of what we do at Hail Varsity. I'm Brandon Vogel, managing editor. I wanted to offer listeners of the Hail Varsity Radio Show podcast $10 off the price of an annual subscription. That means that you can get everything we do, 10 issues of our monthly magazine, our annual football yearbook, and all of the premium content we produce at HaleVarsity.com. Just go to HaleVarsity.com/subscribe and enter the promo code GBR for $10 off a full year of Hale Varsity. That's HaleVarsity.com/subscribe, promo code GBR.
Now back with Hale Varsity Radio with Chris Schmidt and Mark Kranach.
Back into it at Tower 2 at Hail Varsity Radio. We're presented by Currency and but eyes on Cincinnati and Kansas City Round 2 AFC title game. We welcome in longtime coach, former Husker, and a lot of great years with Ohio and, of course, North Dakota State, Jimmy Burrow with us. Coach, thanks for the time. How are we doing?
We're doing good. Looking forward to the weekend.
I bet you are. And before we jumped on air, weather's been on
a lot of the country's mind. Everybody got to Buffalo okay from the Burrow crew, it sounds like.
Yeah, we had them coming in from a lot of different places. Nebraska was a big concern, but since you didn't get the big snowstorm there, people were family was able to get they were able to get out of there and get to Buffalo, and we had some weather issues there, but not for us watching the game, but a certain people out of Cincinnati still couldn't get there. We'd have had more fans, but they had some weather issues here, but we had our family and friends and fans there for sure.
Well, what a impressive win by Cincinnati. Coach, what did they get your take here on how the season started in Cincinnati? And if you could circle a turning point, a tipping point in the year that mm-hmm. that got Cincy going.
First of all, it started the day before camp when Joe had an emergency appendectomy. So that set back the whole process. He missed about 2 weeks of camp. We had the new offensive line that had been put together in the off season. So there were some hurdles we had to overcome early in the season to kind of get that continuity going with the offense. And that was a hard thing to overcome. I think just being able to work together those first few games come back and win one here and there. Even the first game, when it was probably one of Joe's worst games that he's had in the NFL, he threw a touchdown with no time on the clock, and we were just going to kick an extra point and win the game, and we had it blocked. So things just didn't go our way, but there was always still confidence and hope that we could put it together, and we did.
What's your impression as a longtime football coach seeing the team really rally? And I always get a kick out of – covered Zach when he was here at Nebraska, but I get a kick out of Zach going to the different night spots delivering game balls.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's been fun. Zach does a great job on and off the field, and so we appreciate what he does. Robin and I were able to do that They asked us if we wanted to present a game ball here in town last week in Athens. So it was the first game ball presented outside of Cincinnati. So that was a lot of fun. But those guys were prepared last week. I mean, the defense is really playing great. The offensive line was unbelievable. We were able to run the ball. And that gave Joe and his receivers in the passing game a lot of opportunities to not just have to throw every down. So it was a great team win.
Jimmy Burrow with us here on Hail Varsity Radio, AFC title game. Joe Burrow, of course, leading Cincinnati back down to Arrowhead. Let me ask you, Coach, where did you go in Athens? Where did you bring the game ball to?
Courtside. It's a local pizza place and a hangout. That's the kind of the main little drag there uptown. We had a good mix of older people, and then that's one of the hot spots, night spots on a Thursday night. So we kind of had the old group in there, and then here come the students were coming in for their Thursday night get-togethers, and so it was just a packed house. And they had done a nice video in conjunction with the Bengals, and we had a game ball and presented it to Athens. We certainly appreciate all the support that the people in this area have always given to Joe and our family, and so it was good to get that game ball to the courtside there in town.
Now, is Joe going to get a chance to go sign that game ball and go see everyone? What kind of event is it like in Athens whenever Joe comes back hometown?
Well, he comes back. He usually just kind of stays off of Court Street, which is a good thing. But we might get him to sign that ball one of these days. I'm sure he did. He did a little video in the locker room, which I can't believe the Bengals must have asked him right after that win, because that's I probably would never ask him to do something like that right after the game. But he did a short video thanking Athens and presenting them the game ball. And once again, everybody thought it was a really a cool thing to do, and we had a lot of fun.
Speaking of the post-game locker room, do you have a victory cigar picked out for Sunday afternoon? Are you just going to let that one go until the game finishes?
Yeah, that's kind of after the game. We have a location where Jamar's dad, Jimmy Chase, and I lit one up last year in the parking lot after the game. So we know where that place is, and Jimmy smoke cigars way more than me, so he'll have me one ready to go.
Jimmy Burrow is with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Coach, you mentioned a lot about Cincinnati's, you know, game plan and their balance, and being a defensive coach, put your DC hat on, and in your estimation here, what are the problems Cincinnati poses, not just maybe for Kansas City, but just for teams around the league? Zach seems to have, and Coach Callahan, man, their offense is so balanced, and it seems like take one thing away, they could be able to beat you with something else.
But really, it all starts with the running game, I think. If we can run the ball like we did last week, I mean, it just creates all kind of issues for a defense. If we can't run the ball, then we pretty much throw almost every down, and we can still move the ball that way too, but the running game opens everything up, and then you get to four great receivers, the tight end, Hayden Hurst, and T. Higgins, and Tyler Boyd, and Jamar Chase. I think they're the three best as a unit in the league. Joe can can beat you throwing the ball. He can scramble and throw off platform when he does that. So just creates a lot of issues. And then Joe Mixon is a beast back there at the running back position, and so it presents a lot of problems. Joe, people try to blitz, and we get the ball out hot to the receivers and let them run with it. If they drop people back, Joe's really good at finding holes in the zone, and the receivers are all really smart. That's kind of goes unnoticed, and people don't give them as much credit for that. They say they're great athletes, which they are, but they're really smart. They understand coverages. They understand concepts in the passing game, and you put all that together, and you got a real explosive offense. And then Zach and Coach Callahan put a great plan together every week.
From an accuracy standpoint, I mean, Joe's really special. Is that something he's always had, or is that something you see him continuing to work on and perfect?
No, that's kind of always been his calling card. Early in his career, when as he's developing physically, his arm certainly wasn't what it is today. So I think he understood back then that accuracy was something that he had to have. And then as he developed that and he became stronger and his arm became stronger and his whole body became physically stronger, then he still was able to maintain that accuracy, and he continues to do that. And the one good thing that you see out there too is when he scrambles, that's hard to maintain that accuracy, but he seems to be able to be a very accurate passer again on his scrambles also. So once again, it just makes it hard for a defense to defend.
No matter what happens, he always looks like he's got a level head, whether he's scrambling, whether it's third and eight, third and one. It doesn't matter. He always has a level head. And now you look at this game on Sunday, going to a formidable home field advantage in Arrowhead. But we had Bengals corner Mike Hilton on the sideline on Sunday. It's a great video released by NFL Films saying at the end of the game, "We'll see you in Burrowhead," referring to Arrowhead Stadium because Joe Burrow still undefeated at Arrowhead. What's your take on that, Joe, going in battling not only the Chiefs but also the Chiefs' home field advantage?
Yeah. The crowd doesn't really seem to affect Joe and our guys. Arrowhead is unbelievably loud. Buffalo Stadium the other day was unbelievably loud, and Joe started the game off 9 for 9 and two touchdowns. So, he always says that his confidence and his ability and our team's ability or his team's ability to be in those situations is shows up because they're prepared. Zach does a great job preparing the players individually, and Joe is a quarterback, and then the team. And he says, if you know what you're looking for on game day, and you know what's supposed to transpire in your game plan and in your plays, then you can look calm and confident and still understand if things aren't going good that your coaches are going to make adjustments and make changes, and you're still going to be able to come back. I think he also understands leadership and what that means as a quarterback, and you can't lose your cool out there. You can't show whether it's frustration or too much joy and celebration. So that's, I think, where he gets his demeanor and how he's able to react and act out there on the football field.
Coach Jimmy Burrow with us here. A couple more minutes at Hail Varsity Radio. Joe and Cincinnati off to Arrowhead for the AFC title game and another trip to the Super Bowl, perhaps. Coach, have you been part of the advisory committee with the sunglasses collection?
No, people that know me from back in Nebraska or wherever I've been know that any fashion statement that Joe has definitely doesn't come from me. But he likes to look good and show confidence when they're traveling and game day. My wife and Joe's mom, Robin, was a fashion merchandising major at when she left Cook, Nebraska to go to college, and now she's a principal. But earlier she was involved in things like that. So maybe that's where he gets it. But he doesn't ask me for what he should wear on game day, because some of those things I would probably veto.
Gotta have one of these games. He's just gotta raid your closet, and we'll see what the outfit looks like.
Oh yeah, I mean, I'm still a sweatshirt and blue jeans guy, and really Joe, for the most part, is like that too. If you saw him, you know, around the house, or I'm sure the locker room and those type things, it's pretty casual. But over the years, he's developed his own sense of what he likes to wear, he's not afraid to kind of go out there with some of those outfits.
Coach, I wanted to get your thoughts, if you've had any crossover or connection at all with Matt Rhule in the coaching circles, or just a reaction to his time now in Lincoln as Nebraska, now in the Rhule era.
I don't know Matt. As everybody, when I knew he was going to be the coach in Nebraska, started reading more things about him and his resume and what he did in college, you know, is outstanding, and there's a proven track record there. So you just hope that, you know, he embraces the Nebraska tradition and understands it, which I'm sure Trev thinks he does. And so that all points to hopefully Nebraska getting back to the way it once was, once upon a time. So we're still Nebraska fans, and I hope that they can get it going there.
Had a chance not long ago during some of the bowl games, chance to be on Coach Walden's radio show and keep in contact with Jim Walden. And I know you coached with him and played for him, but I found out you were his neighbor growing up. How was Coach Walden as a neighbor? Did you have to cut his yard? Or, I mean, tell me about that experience.
We moved next door to him in the fifth grade. I actually became his starting corner as a 10th grader, and then he went to Nebraska. You know, that's a whole story in itself. That's how I ended up at Nebraska. I was just on his show, I think a couple of Saturdays ago. Joe, because I was there with him at Iowa State and eventually became the head coach at Ames, that's where Joe was born. And so my whole family history is traced back to Coach Walden at some point, whether it was next door, going to Nebraska, hiring me at Washington State, asking me to go with him to Iowa State. So he's an important part for me, not only growing up, but just my whole history of football and being a coach, and even Jamie and Dan that ended up playing in Nebraska. They grew up in Ames, Iowa, and played for the Little Cyclones because that's all because of Coach Walden. He's an unbelievable person, and he's done so much for me in my lifetime that I'm always indebted to him for a lot of the things that I've done in football, for sure.
Coach Jimmy Burrow with us, Joe and the Bengals in Kansas City. Coach, enjoy your trip to KC. We'll be rooting for you. Thanks for giving us a few minutes today.
All right. Thank you. Go Bengals. Go Huskers.
Hey, it's Schmitty. Want to tell you about a fantastic opportunity to work for a rapidly growing company that also enjoys the benefits earned with having competitive, stable history of work over 20 years? FSC. The FSC Edge, it's a leading technology innovator serving governmental agencies. Expert services helping worldwide patent offices meet strict processing and publishing timelines while delivering exceptional quality. They support some of the world's largest patent offices throughout the U.S. and Europe. That includes the European Patent Office, the German Patent and Trademark Office, and the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office. The only group of companies worldwide to provide such support to all three of these agencies. Working at FSC, you have a chance to work with fun people with great attitudes and learn about patents. You're not on the phone. You're not customer-facing. It's casual dress, and the work environment, it's a new environment with over $2 million in improvements. You have access to generous benefits packages, company support for health and wellness, and you do impactful work on a national scale. Make a difference. Their team's constantly growing, and they're always looking for new people to join their mission. Check out what's available today at fscedge.com.
The Hail Varsity Radio Saturday Morning Show. Strap yourselves in. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt.
Y'all don't even know he was a virgin until he's 28, and now, Roll Tide.
And Mark Kranak.
Time has come for someone to put his foot down. And that foot is me.
Back with you, it's Hour 2, Weekend Edition at Hail Varsity Radio, presented by Currency. For all your equipment financing needs, go Currency. Chris Schmidt, Mark Kranak, Elijah Herbel, Brandon Vogel is hanging out as we get going in this second hour. And can send emails, chris@hailvarsity.com, reminding you to get that subscription now to Hail Varsity Magazine and.com, hailvarsity.com/offer is how you do that. I got both pups roaming around. I think the Labradoodles had 7 gallons of water. I don't know if there's more or less Husker hype, if we're going to put it into gallon measurements with the Dylan Raiola setup. But, man, it's been an interesting 24 hours. We bring in Brandon Vogel. Vogues, how we doing? Good to see you this Saturday morning.
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
We're good, man. Good and excited for a weekend of NFL action and also how things continue to shake out here right before signing day, the final signing day for next week. And wanted to start off with Dylan Raiola and Nebraska sending 9 of the 10 down to sunny, warmer Arizona. Your thought on the continual impression Nebraska's making?
Yeah, you can't say they're not putting in the work. They definitely have displayed the importance to Dylan in their mind, and this latest kind of onslaught, I guess, for lack of a better term, only backed that up. And you know, you look at this. I look at this. Nebraska's got to be in a pretty good spot. Who knows who the actual leader is? But you kind of got. He's been to Nebraska multiple times. You've obviously got the deep and intense family connection to the university. And you know, at the start of a new coaching regime, landing the number one quarterback in the country would certainly be. You'd get a lot of positive buzz just based on that. You know, players still got to come in and produce, but if Nebraska were able to land him, boy, would that be kind of a real shot in the arm, I think, for just Nebraska football, the brand.
Let's compare it historically to Brandon, where in the past, now Tommy Frazier wasn't necessarily the number one quarterback in the country before the option he was. There's no question about that. You fast forward 5 or so years, same with Crouch, right? Like, maybe not the best quarterback in the country, but the best option quarterback. Since then, would you say Nebraska? I don't think Nebraska has landed some sort of like consensus, surefire, incredibly talented quarterback that everybody was after. I think Nebraska's just kind of gotten some dudes. Few of them have panned out in different ways. Right? Or am I missing somebody? I'm just trying to think back. Last 20-some years, has Nebraska been in the sweepstakes for basically a can't-miss guy like that?
No, not at that level of quarterback that I can recall. I mean, honestly, in terms of kind of buzz, is Tanner Lee as close as you get?
I was going to say...
I mean, serious.
How about a guy that never ended up on campus in Bubba Starling?
Bubba Starling. I mean, maybe. I think the real answer of somebody who was very, very close to Nebraska is Lamar Jackson. And, you know, if you talk to Tim Beck, you know, he'll still say they thought they had him. And it kind of fell apart there at the last second and goes to Louisville, has a great career there, of course. That's probably as close as they come, but I'd have to go back and look at what Lamar Jackson was as a high school prospect. He was obviously highly rated, but was he, you know, Raiola Manning level, which we've seen in these past two classes? Probably not. Matthew on the stream. Thank you, Matthew. Harrison Beck.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good. And he was up there. I don't think he was a five-star guy, though, right? I don't think he was, like... We have to go back and look at it.
He was right there. They took him over Mark. They took him over Mark Sanchez. That's the
he was highly touted.
Urban rumor.
But I guess my point in bringing that up is like, is that really what's been missing? Right? Like, do you need to land that dude at quarterback, which then will attract the incredible offensive linemen, the incredible running backs, the incredible – it's that halo effect that you get from landing that dude.
It could be. I have a hard time saying it's missing because it's been missing. I've been somebody – through our dual Martinez eras, and we were all well aware of kind of the limitations and the mistakes that came with Taylor and Adrian at times. But – when I look at those quarterbacks were obviously talented. And I thought they played at a level probably higher than Nebraska achieved as a team. So when I look at that, you know, it's kind of like, oh, well, where's the breakdown? Like, yeah, you don't want to fumble that much. And the turnovers hurt, but those things are kind of tough. So, you know, somebody like Raiola, just with his kind of standing in this 2024 class and his prestige and his links to Nebraska, I do think you get an effect in Nebraska recruiting overall that kind of says, okay, something's going on here that's different than where Nebraska has been, because we're going to look at this 2023 class, they're going to end up right where Nebraska has traditionally been in kind of team rankings, and that's an achievement in my mind.
Brandon, if nine people rolled up to your house trying to sell you on something, your reaction would be what?
go away. I'm uncomfortable when I get the one out of nowhere visitor. You know, the door-to-door salesman days are largely over, but I'd say one, two, three times a year, because I'm pretty much home all the time. You get somebody, you hear a doorbell ring at noon, it's like, what is this? I wasn't expecting a package, and it's somebody on your front step ceiling. Hey, have you ever thought about gutter guards? Be like, yeah, I thought about it a lot. Haven't made the purchase yet, so have a nice day.
See, that doorbell rings. Yeah. That doorbell rings, and you hope it's like Girl Scouts with cookies, and then it's always gutter guard people or like some product you don't need, and you go, damn, I wish it was cookies. Every time.
You hope it's someone selling cookies. I hope it's a nurse from Ferris Bueller's Day Off, but I guess we just think different.
But, I'll be right back Googling.
Bogues, you did a great story and feature in the latest Hail Varsity magazine issue. We have it here for folks to see on the stream, get the subscription. But you touch on Satterfield, and there we go. Thank you. That's the.
She looks kind of crazy, man. I don't know about that.
Crazy is okay sometimes. I'm interested in Satterfield and his offense, and then All right, let's apply that here as we continue to talk Dylan Raiola. Currently, you have a room full of quarterbacks here and now. Future is Raiola, but let's talk about that application for the room now, and then for maybe Raiola here with Satterfield.
Yeah, kind of looking at that story in the magazine you mentioned at where these both coordinators, offense and defense, have been during their previous coordinator stints, compared it a little bit to Nebraska. I mean, I think the big thing for me with Satterfield is he came out right out of the gates. First time we got a chance to talk to him, talking about we want to run the football. Music to a lot of Nebraska fans' ears, but you'll look at his stints at Temple and then at South Carolina. They weren't that run heavy. And I try not to get too caught up in like, oh, they were only like 45% instead of 55. Like everyone's going to kind of fall between those ranges for the most part, unless you're a service academy or Minnesota of late. So it's for me, it's more about running the football effectively, being able to run it when you need to and want to. And if you do that well enough, well, you might end up with more pass attempts. You know, I saw something, I can't remember from where, it was from one of the stats people on Twitter, noted that last year, I think South Carolina was top 10 in terms of percentage of passes thrown at or behind the line of scrimmage, which is interesting when you consider, you know, Spencer Rattler has always had kind of all the arm talent in the world. So that was, you know, a little bit more something you associate, I think most people right now associate more with the spread, but you think back to kind of the Callahan years, Marlon Lucky catching 75 balls in a season. It can be a part of the pro style offense too. Nebraska's in a good spot in that, you know, Casey Thompson's coming off of surgery, but super experienced quarterback. You also got Jeff Sims in the mix now, who's played a ton of football. So I think they're good there. The thing that Nebraska and South Carolina's offense in 2022 shared was they were both kind of explosiveness over efficiency, which, if you know, you the world is your oyster and you can choose one, I think you choose efficiency. But I think Satterfield, with what North South Carolina did last season, comes to a Nebraska offense that has some of those same capabilities in terms of big plays.
Trev Alberts this week on his radio show alluded to it. I didn't read into it too much or listen to it myself, but just, you know, haven't seen the quotes. Mentioned the spring game and just saying it's going to be football. Are we to read into that it's not going to be modified scoring system, green jerseys all over the place, tagging off on running backs, weird punting competitions, and like, is it just going to be a football game with two teams playing, I don't know, football?
I certainly hope so. That was my first reaction, and even beyond, you know, we're not giving the defense points for stops. Not that those things aren't important, but nobody can keep up with it. You need a menu of how this thing is actually scored. I hope it means that, you know, instead of going through the dance of we don't want to put too much on film in this spring game, it's on Big Ten Network, you know, people are watching. Let's get rid of the paranoia. Let's just go out there and like use that as an actual practice instead of forfeiting one of your 15 spring practices. Like use it. I mean, particularly at the start of a new regime, I think Nebraska could use that time to go out and run things. And whether we see like a sliver of what Nebraska wants to be in 2023, or we see a bigger slice, like we're all going to make too much of it and talk about it for the next 2 months anyway. So go out there and do something that feels good for the fans, but also helps you accomplish something, I think, from a simple practice perspective.
They ran outside zone. Frank, get out your notepad. Like, we got Nebraska scouted now. Like, come on. Oh, they needed four wide receivers. You know, I mean, come on. What are they trying to hide?
Yeah. Brandon, while we're talking spring game here, can you give me a couple of names you're interested in seeing in that game? And I know it's way too early here. We haven't even gotten reports out of spring practice of who's looking good and who might be getting significant play time. But can you give me a name or two that is intriguing to you and you want to see on the field for Nebraska this spring?
And a prediction, yeah. Who wins, red or white.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. I'm thinking, I'm interested to see Jeff Sims, and he's going to be a big part, I think, of the discussion around Nebraska football. got the chance to watch him a bit at Georgia Tech, and obviously came in as a really highly touted recruit. Interested there. I'm interested in Ben Scott, the transfer who probably, I mean, at this point we would assume is in the mix at center, or maybe he ends up someplace else. I'm kind of interested also to see, well, two receivers that were on the team, but now they're back in Garcia, Castaneda, and Betts. I think will be interesting too. Like Garcia Castaneda, you maybe expect to hit the ground running a little bit more, or at least I do. Betts, it'll just be like you are away for the game for nearly a year. Let's see how that pans out. So a lot of intrigue on offense for me. I'm probably leaving off a couple of defense guys that I'll regret later, but Nebraska, you know, has got a lot of known quantities on that side of the ball.
Brendan Vogel's with us, HailVarsity.com and magazine managing editor, author with John Cook, Dream Like a Champion, at Brandon L. Vogel on Twitter. Vogues, what do you make of what Rule's done the last couple of days? And that's pretty heavy in Missouri and also the Kansas City region. And it's not just the 500-mile radius, but these are really, if we're going to look at the stars next to the names, they're 4- and 5-star guys. I mean, we're talking top 6, top 3, top 8 at their respective positions, on top of a couple of offensive tackles, defensive linemen, wide receivers. And to your knowledge, what did Rule go after? Did he go after stars or fit? And to me, he's always prioritized fit, but just because that fit has now 4 or 5 stars next to it, he didn't shy in a way. I mean, he may be a little late or later to the party, but he's still showing up with kids in this region. And that's kind of music to my ears, Nebraska getting back into Missouri.
Yeah, I think fit will kind of forever be where they start with things. That said, you know, you come in, you take a new job. All right, we got to figure out quickly, like, who's staying from the currently committed 2023 class? Who else do we need to go get? Who can we get in with and have a shot at signing eventually? You do that, you also got to kind of like start looking towards 2024. It's a lot all at once. So I think with some of the guys that we've seen offered and where they're from, you know, it's good in my mind because it indicates that Kansas City and St. Louis and really the state of Missouri as a whole, this staff, Rule himself, you know, whoever it is, probably a collective effort, is aware of the importance of that region. And, you know, you look through Nebraska's history at some of the great players that have come from the state of Missouri, you gotta get in there. And Nebraska had some success in Kansas City, you know, fairly recently. It struggled to kind of crack St. Louis over the past 5, 6, 7 recruiting cycles, I think. Got to get in there. So overall, when I look at this recruiting plan, you know, Ed Foley is out there, who's been to like 300 some schools in Nebraska, it seems. Matt Rule has, well, they got to Arizona, has set up his like Texas Nebraska outpost, which is also super fascinating. And now they're getting to kind of the 500-mile radius plus a little bit when you look at Missouri and just some of those more regional recruits. So I think it's been a pretty solid approach to knowing what you can get at Nebraska and knowing what you've been able to get in the past.
Brandon Vogel with us on Hail Varsity Radio as we talk Nebraska football. And by the way, shout out on the tour. They made it to Stella's. Shout out Bellevue. Shout out best burger in Nebraska. I know that's controversial, but I'm going to go with that. Shout out Francois' family. So what do you make of, and you'd alluded to it earlier about Xavier Betts, Isaiah Garcia Castaneda, just the wide receiver room as a whole. We talked about it last weekend as just being like, I think it skews towards probable given the guys that you have added to Marcus Washington and Alante Brown, who I view as sort of your stabilizers. You know what you're going to get with those guys. You could probably get more from both of them. But you're adding 5 pretty high profile. Either they've been super productive already, or they are like top 100 with Malachi Coleman, Xavier Betts. I think it skews towards probable that you're going to get production out of that room.
right? Like, I just can't imagine that the wide receiver room is going to be some sort of, I don't know, detriment to the team.
No, I don't think it's, I don't view it as a detriment at this point. You know, receiver is one of those positions where you can make an impact early. Experience helps, continuity between your quarterback and your receiving core helps. Nebraska doesn't totally check that box. When I look at that group, I see a lot of potential. I think what you're, the question I can't answer right now is kind of like, who's your top line guy? Who's the guy when it's third and nine and you're like, okay, we're going to try and go there. You know, based on their usage last year, I guess Marcus Washington kind of holds that title until we actually get into practice and stuff like that and see what happens in the off season. That's kind of the piece there where I'm like, okay, who's going to fill that role? And I think that makes it intriguing for some of those younger prospects who are coming in. You know, like a Malachi Coleman, you know, but he doesn't have to, I think, be that kind of player, but there's potential there, for just that receiver who you can count on to win one-on-one more often than not. That's kind of the one missing piece, but I think they've got a lot of options to, somebody can develop into that role and they've got a lot of options to choose from.
Brandon, in an ideal world, do you think that Matt Rhule wants to be starting freshman on this team next season in order to get them some experience and, you know, set up the future? Do you think in an ideal world he wants to let those guys sit and develop and get ready? Because there's two sides to that coin. One is that, yeah, whenever you put freshmen in, they're going to make freshman mistakes. But on the other hand, getting them some experience is going to help you 2-3 years down the road.
Yeah, I don't think he has to do that. You know, with a coaching change, I think you'll always have, if you're a freshman coming in with a new coaching staff, you always have a couple of better percentage points of seeing the field right away. Just by nature of coaches look at this, that's a guy I'm going to have for multiple years. You know, Matt Rhule on the Bustin' with the Boys podcast said that's what they chose to do essentially at Temple. Like they kind of ripped the Band-Aid off, played a ton of freshmen right away, went 2-10, I think. And it was rough, but it paid off down the line. I don't think you have to go that route at Nebraska, though I do expect there's a better chance for some of those young players, those newcomers, even young transfers who are a little bit earlier in their career, but to make an impact that maybe is a little bit harder 2-3 years down the road.
Brandon Vogel with us. Vogues, what's on the radar for you and Hail Varsity this weekend?
Yeah, have basketball coverage on the website, of course, this weekend. We'll see what pops up recruiting-wise. There's always seems to be something new going on there. And busy preparing our February issue. We'll hit on women's basketball a little bit more there. Got the start of softball and baseball, so that's been good. Softball team plays pretty soon, actually. So looking forward to getting those things started. And other long-term projects in terms of football and breaking down this new era as it continues to unfold.
And Vogue, before we get you out of here, I need your Sunday NFL predictions. Niners, Eagles, Chiefs, Bengals. Who you got going to the Super Bowl?
I'll go Chiefs, Niners, because I can't.
Ooh, a rematch.
I don't have anything against the state of Philadelphia, but all my in-laws are Eagles fans, and I want them to be sad.
Wow.
I'm just kidding.
Man,
I think that's it.
He wasn't very convincing of the old
Stone Cold Classic in the 49ers uniforms. And Eagles has just never worked for me.
Fair enough.
I don't like Philly fans, except for Pastor Shike, of course. But, I mean, that's my biggest problem is Philly fan, right? I mean.
Yeah, I guess we better be careful if we're all anti-Eagles. We might anger Matt Rhule.
Well, and as a uniform guy, what is up with that Eagles green, blue? What? It's terrible. Absolutely terrible.
Give me the black. Give me the black.
Yeah. Well, which looks terrible with that dark greenish blue. It's that they have the worst uniforms in the NFL.
Yep, more fashion NFL next weekend. Yep. Vogues, take care, bud. Thanks for the time today.
Thanks, guys.
There he is, Brandon Vogel with us on Hail Varsity. Quick timeout. We'll hit the home stretch here, the weekend edition with Hail Varsity presented by Currency. The Iron Horse on the way. Gary Sharp up next. Hello, listener. Hey, it's Chris Schmidt with Hail Varsity Radio, and I wanted to let you know about a special deal just for listeners of the Hail Varsity Radio Show podcast. We're offering $10 off the annual subscription price. That means that you can get everything we do. 10 issues of our monthly magazine, our annual football yearbook, and all the premium content we produce at HailVarsity.com. Just go to HailVarsity.com/subscribe and enter in the promo code GBR for $10 off a full year of Hail Varsity. That's HailVarsity.com/subscribe, promo code GBR.
Glad to have you back.
Yes, sir. You heard me right.
Here are the guys, Schmidt and Kranak.
Well, Hector, here's the game plan. Going to bring us two absolute martinis. You know how I like them, straight up. And then precisely 7.5 minutes after that, you're going to bring us two more. Then two more after that, every 5 minutes until one of us passes out.
Excellent strategy, sir.
Back with you. It's Weekend Edition. It's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by Currency. Chris Schmidt, Mark Kranak, Elijah Herbal, the Iron Horse. With us, Gary Sharp. Sharpie, I love the stocking hat, man. Has anyone freaked out when you went in to get coffee this morning?
Not yet, but it's I'm in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and it's like 60 here today. So it does look a little odd. I thought you would comment on my, for the second straight week, the artwork in the hotel room that I'm staying in.
Well, you know, I'm sorry, but I see, was it Eminem or Gary Sharp, my man, jumping on? I love it. It's okay.
Yeah, this is a new look. I'm having a midlife crisis in 2023, so I'm going with this look.
Well, I loved doing 8 Mile.
Yeah, you were good. What's the artwork behind you? Is it some guy in a boat staring off into the
No, I believe it is somebody wandering through a forest. Mm. Yeah, which hangs above your bed, which is kind of a little creepy.
Yeah, it's not nine folks in red zip-ups on the doorstep.
Can we talk real quick hotel artwork and themes? Okay, so
yes.
January of, like, I don't know, 2004 or something like that, go to Williston, North Dakota. It was for JUCO hoops. You know, that's life when you're trying to come up, right? And it's negative 20, right? And the entire hotel is decorated in palm trees and pineapples. It just pissed me off. You know, you're just like, stop it, you lying jerks. Like, you look outside and, you know, people are, oh my God. Who's got the worst artwork? Because, Gary, you've had to go to some far-flung places as UNO has tried different conferences and different sports. And so you've been to some spots that people haven't been to. Where's the worst hotel scene and theme that you've had to endure?
Clearly Macomb, Illinois, where Western Illinois is, because when you go into the bathroom and right above the toilet is like this picture that's supposed to look like Macomb, but I'm pretty sure that Macomb does not have that many streetlights.
Some false advertising.
And it's a little bit intimidating.
Yeah, I would say so.
Yes.
Yeah. This is Macomb, Illinois, the ranker right now for Sharpie. Gary, let's gauge your take here on Nebraska and the Riola race.
Well, it's clearly a priority when you send nine coaches there. And then it's kind of interesting. He's in a good spot. Dylan is, because everybody wants him, and he's going to be at USC this weekend. But it's clear that Nebraska's back into the game. And they've made him a priority, and I think they're handling it the right way. And, you know, it's you have to present something to him that just doesn't have to do with his uncle or his dad, that there is something there that if he comes here, he's going to get to where he wants to go, and that is the NFL, but ultimately win on the football field. So it's kind of like the staff is starting from behind, but, boy, it feels like they've made up a lot of ground in a short amount of time just by being adults. You know, handling the situation. Hey, we realize your importance to Nebraska. We want you to be here, and this is what we're going to show you, and we're going to lay out the plan. And I can't imagine, none of us have ever been recruited like that, except for Elijah, where you have that much of attention on you, and you don't know how to handle it. Because, I mean, everybody is saying, you know, the same things. We want you, we want you, we want you. But I'll give credit to Nebraska and Matt Rhule. They got back into the game, and they're in the game. I don't know if they're a front runner, But I'll tell you what, they're going to make it hard for him to say no, which is ultimately what you want if he's not going to pick a school just based on winning and losing.
Gary Sharp is with us.
I appreciate the Gary, the compliment, Gary, on that one. But I'll tell you what, Midland never sent 9 assistant coaches to come visit Elijah Herbel. So,
I mean, well, guys, do you think that's overwhelming? I mean, we look at it from the outside and go, wow, 9 coaches, that's cool. But do you think that's a little overwhelming?
I mean, a little. Depends. Like, I'd imagine
it's the statement to the other schools that are recruiting him for sure.
Now, it's overwhelming if you live in a 2-bedroom apartment. But I'd imagine the Rayola's got some square footage. And so it's just kind of fine. You just kind of, like, hey, go hang out by the pool. Go hang out by the jacuzzi. Go play on our full court basketball that we got in the back. You know, go play some pickleball. I think they have, like, probably an athletic complex on that property.
Probably.
You know, it's it, and Gary Sharp is with us. He's going to record a House of Pain video a little bit later on. Gary, speaking of recruiting, the Omaha area and really Nebraska as a whole now, how much has the game changed in the last decade in terms of competition? There used to be kind of just Nebraska's, you know, you would occasionally get somebody leak out to Notre Dame or something like that. But how fierce is the competition? How much of a stop is the Omaha and Nebraska area for coaches well outside of Nebraska?
Well, you know what? And Mark and Schmidt and Elijah, you guys are all familiar with the high school football in this area. And it has gotten it has taken to a whole nother level. The coaching is better. The depth across the entire metro area is better. And it's turned into a year-round sport in Omaha with everything you can do outside of your high school season. And there are some extremely talented players. And the exposure, and I don't think it's just Omaha. I think it's the entire state. When you're in a state like Nebraska, which is landlocked and only 1.9 million people, and people look over it as a flyover state, now there's some great football talent, whether it be in Ainsworth or in Omaha. But there's so many different avenues out there to get your film out that people become very aware quickly of what we have in Nebraska. And you look at the schools that have rolled through Nebraska or rolled through Omaha, well, and Nebraska. I mean, it's impressive. It's very impressive. And I think it makes Nebraska it's a pro and a con for Nebraska. It's a pro because the talent is on the Big Ten level right now of a good handful of players every year in the state of Nebraska. So Nebraska doesn't have to go far to get guys that could come in and they can play at your conference level. The con is there are so many different options, and Nebraska hasn't given you a reason to say yes yet. They haven't done something on the field. They can build up all kinds of relationships, but if somebody comes in and they say, hey, you know, we were in the playoff last year, look at what we have. I mean, that's a little bit tough. And in Omaha, there's so many different options where Nebraska isn't front and center like other places in the state. But I think it's great moving forward. I think if Matt Rhule plays his cards correctly, and we've seen that, I mean, where in the world is Ed Foley this morning? And where is his cholesterol level after all the places that he's eaten? I mean, Nebraska's doing it the right way. They just need that one or two guys in the 24-25 class to say yes. And then I think you'll start to see a stream of players that'll follow because those are some of the headliners in this town.
Gary, tell me a little bit about Christian Jones from up at Westside. He got an offer from USC yesterday, and I just want to get your take on him. You've seen him a little bit more than we have down here in Lincoln. And is he the next can't-miss in-state prospect from the inside the state borders of Nebraska?
I would say, how about that? How a kid at Omaha Westside gets an offer from USC. Guys, USC has come into Omaha. I mean, when Avante Dickerson got the offer from Oregon, we were like, whoa, now USC is in Omaha. And why not? Because they're going to join the conference next year. He has taken a huge jump. First of all, you saw him like in eighth grade and you knew he was going to be good. Then he went to Omaha Burke and he was on the field as a freshman at Omaha Burke. And he just had that knack. He had that instinct playing outside and playing in space. And as you saw this past year at Westside is him playing in space. He's got great closing speed. I kind of also like him on the offensive side of the ball, but his future is playing linebacker. I just think he's a smart kid. His body is something that is going to get bigger, but his speed and his closing speed, but his ability to cover tight ends and running backs out of the backfield in space, I think is one of his best attributes. He's just a really, really good player that the more the season went on for Westside, and there were a lot of players to recognize, you would go and watch West Side play and you would recognize Christian Jones. It wasn't at the beginning of the year, but towards the tail end, he really made an impact. And I'll tell you what, that is, you know, Nebraska and the previous staff, they were on him early. That's a really smart offer by USC and other schools that have come in to offer Christian Jones, because he's going to be the next great linebacker to come out of Omaha.
Gary Sharp with us here on Hail Varsity Weekend. Sharp, you want to go to basketball here for a minute, and it just keeps getting, you know, steeper for Fred and Nebraska. You've worked a lot in your career with Trev Alberts, and without asking you to read his mind, how do you think he's evaluating Fred?
I think he's got a tough – Schmitty, Elijah, and Mark, I think he's got a tough job. Because it's clear that this year's Nebraska basketball team is different. It almost feels like year one. The cohesiveness is better. He went out and hired a defensive coach, and we've seen that's been a little bit different. Now, the con is Fred is an offensive guy, and this is a very poor shooting basketball team. The roster construction this year, you know, they got a bunch of guys that are 3, 4, 5 options on a Big Ten starting five. But they play hard, and they've been able to pull the parking brake when they've gotten into these ruts where, you know, a 5-game losing streak doesn't lead to a 6th or a 7 and an 8 or a 9 like we've seen in the past. But now he's in kind of dire straits because they don't have enough bodies. I don't know. I think Fred will be back. But, boy, it's tough to say that, guys, on January 28th with a decimated roster and still a month and about 3 weeks to go to see where this is going. But it's almost like, man, if you're Nebraska basketball, yes, exactly. If you're Nebraska basketball, it is one of those things where, man, what did we do to anger anybody? What did Danny Nee do when he left the building? Because Nebraska basketball just can't get any momentum. You could say they're cursed, whatever. It's just one thing after another. When this season, I mean, people are going to forget that they beat Creighton. They beat Iowa. They took Purdue to overtime. So I think it's important for Fred to keep guys' heads above water. It's going to be tough to find some victories along this stretch. But I think Trev, in a tough spot, I think Trev will make the decision that, you know what, Fred, I'm gonna trust Fred that he can go find the next Griesel and Walker. A thing that would help Fred that he can't do anything about right now is he doesn't have a McGowan's on the hook. We don't know about Ramel Lloyd. We don't know about Eli Rice, who's coming in next year. None of those guys you go, man, they're a game changer, like a McGowan's would be, where if you were fighting for your job, you'd say, hey, you know, Trev, Vandermill Gary is out. You know what kind of what that does to our roster. But, hey, look at what I have coming. Fred doesn't have that right now. So you have to put faith in, if you're bringing him back, to say, hey, he's going to go find in the portal guys that can make a difference and guys that can go get you buckets.
Gary Sharp is with us on Hail Varsity Radio. We'll be listening to Ice Cube's death certificate after we get off of this radio
You're
show.
You're just nailing all of the great albums, and you just hit one right there. You went House of Pain. Now it's Death Certificate. We've had an Eminem shout out. I mean, we're right there. We're right there.
He's got a great beanie on for people that are not watching and only listening. Now with hoops, is Fred a grinder? Does what Trev wanted in a football coach apply to all coaches? Does Fred fit that mold that Trev wants?
I don't know when I think Fred, I don't immediately say grinder, but don't confuse his personality for a guy that is on easy street.
And there goes Gary. Yeah. He's saying easy street.
That was going to be.
There he is. Okay, now there he's back.
Yeah, we got you back.
We lost you at easy street. You can go ahead with Electric Avenue, whichever.
Which I was going down that path to use, you know, Fred Hoiberg as a grinder, comparing him to some of the greatest rappers. Don't confuse his personality, you know, which is kind of laid back, more of a pro personality, for a guy that doesn't grind. I think he gets after it, but he gets after it in a different way. You know, it may come down, guys, also to the personality, you know, Trev and Fred's relationship. But, you know, it's one of those things where I think Fred this year, and this is a bonus for Fred. We all know what it was like coming into this year. And Fred Fred adjusted. Fred changed this year in the way he approached. And I think that's a sign for an older coach that's been around the block at a bunch of different places to be able to change on the fly. I don't know. That's why this whole conversation, and remember, it's January 28th. They play Maryland today. That's not going to be easy. Is E. It's a tough discussion. It's a tough decision because there's a ledger of, okay, these things look a lot different in year number four, but then there's no guarantee that in year five it's going to pop. And if you're watching the game on Wednesday night, did you three guys go, man, how come Nebraska can't be Northwestern? You know, what is Northwestern doing? And Northwestern lost two key guys that are helping other Power Five teams, and they're on the cusp of going back to the NCAA tournament after a lengthy disappearance. I found myself going, wow, why can't Nebraska find a Ty Berry? Why can't they find a Boo Booey? You know, where's that at for Nebraska basketball?
Gary Sharp is with us here on a Saturday morning edition of Hail Varsity Radio. And Gary, from your time around Trev with his time at UNO, what's your take on, you know, the past 6 months for Trev being a factor in this Fred Hoiberg decision? Is it an exhaustive coaching search for the football team? And do you think that Trev's the type of guy that might push off a coaching search for basketball for a year just because, you know what, after the past 6 months, he doesn't want to go into another coaching search? But or is he just the grinder type that, you know what, he's going to do what's best for the university no matter what? And if he thinks it's time for Fred to go, he's willing to go, you know, start another coaching search despite how crazy the past 6 months have been.
I think he'll look at what's best for the players inside of the program and the program in general. I think Trev has a good feel of the vibe of a program, of what the student athletes are doing, how they carry themselves, you know, discussions with coaches and their blueprint and their plan. And I think he has a good read on, do you have momentum going forward? Do you have a plan that can lead to success? And, you know, it's kind of a mystery because we're so focused on the football search and what Matt Rhule's done in a short amount of time. Now things start to shift to Fred. And really, I think Trev is very appreciative of Fred this year because Fred said at the in the middle of the summer, guys, this is going to be a likable team. You're going to like this team. They're going to play hard. Well, I think we all agree that when they've had their core together, we feel that way. Mm-hmm. But now things shift. I think there was a quote the other day. And again, I think Trev has a good beat on the pulse of a program, and he listens to a lot of different people. You know, we're all saying, oh, man, I guess the evaluation of Fred is closed now that he loses two key guys. Trev the other night said, you know what? Everybody has injuries. Let's see how you deal with them. And I thought, whoa, okay, this evaluation process is still going on. I go back and forth, guys, on what's going to happen, but I think unless it's Fred's decision, I think Fred will be back for year number five. And it's, you know, are you guys in the mode? Because I'm getting this from my friends and my listeners is, yeah, okay, if he comes back, great. If he doesn't come back, great. See what a weird balance that is?
Yeah. It is. And I lean towards bring him back. And, you know, there's been some resistance with that because the record doesn't lie. But to your point, and I think we've seen it, you've seen change. You've seen a change in behavior, a change in it's more blue collar. And we were talking about that earlier this week, too. And you know what? Good for him, because too many coaches too many times dig in and say, you know, this is how it's going to be. I'm right. Just got to trust the process, and it doesn't ever pop.
Well, I think the mood around Nebraska is that, you know what, if Fred Hoiberg can't be the guy to get it done and get Nebraska their first tournament win, who the hell can? Because, I mean, it's Fred Hoiberg.
Well,
and you know what, and Elijah, we all said that when he got hired. Oh, wow, this is the guy that's perfect for Nebraska. And, you know, Nebraska basketball has been meandering in the desert for a while. But my counterpoint to that is there's a guy in Manhattan, Kansas, who nobody knew except for inside of the basketball world who Jerome Tang was. He comes in, utilizes the portal, and look at Kansas State is right in the mix in America's toughest conference of winning the Big 12. So there's that part of it. It's just, you know, it's just a program that hasn't been able to harness any momentum for a long time, where you have spurts of you feel good, you like going to the games, it's a likable team, but they just haven't been able to sustain it. And then there's something that happens, either a wonky loss or you start to lose guys to injuries. And this year, that's the worst thing that could happen, because when they have had their core together, really the core four, they've been a pretty good basketball team. But man, that game against Creighton, which ironically was on the Sunday that the Chiefs and the Bengals met in the regular season, fast forward to tomorrow when the Chiefs and Bengals meet again, and look at the difference of how you feel about Nebraska basketball from the first Sunday in December to the last Sunday in January.
Sharpie, you let us in. We got about a minute or two here. Your thoughts, Chiefs fan. Are you feeling okay tomorrow, or, oh no, it's Cincinnati? And then let's give me a thought here on Philly and San Fran as well, real quick.
So it's going to be cold at Burrowhead, but that's okay. Both teams are outdoor teams. Thank God we didn't have a neutral site game. Remember, everybody talks about the Bengals being 3-0 against Mahomes and the Chiefs, and they are. But those three games have all been deficit of 3 points. And in those games, Kansas City has led. Kansas City has had a lot of self-inflicted mistakes. This is a great Bengals team. I mean, especially with Joe Burrow at quarterback, it changes them. But I wonder if Cincinnati finally, the offensive lineman down, catches up to him. I, not being a homer, I do like the Chiefs at home tomorrow to get revenge from last year. On the other side, man, you're going to get popped. And I think the Niners will hit Jalen Hurts as much as possible. That'll be a tight game, but I believe that Philadelphia will eke it out, and Nick Sirianni will enjoy another national chain of pizza as a celebratory meal. He's gone from Pizza Hut to Little Caesars to what would be the next, Papa John's?
Oh, he'll go Michael Scott and go to Sbarro.
Which would be fantastic. They finally have one of those, Mark, they finally have one of those back in Omaha.
I know. I saw that. It's great, man. Now they need to bring back Team Spirit and Game Gallery, and I'm, you know, just like bring back all the mall like staples.
Let's go Showbiz Pizza Place. Let's just go all old school with our pizza joints.
Yes, please.
Sharpie, when you hit the hot topic later in that ski mask and stocking hat, make sure you get the concert T-shirt to wear to the game tonight.
I will do that. Guys, I appreciate it. This is, you know, now that I get to see your lovely faces early in the morning, you're the first people I get to see. I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing.
Congratulations. He's going to go right for the tequila here shortly. Sharpie, take care. Have a good call. Appreciate you.
Hey, thanks, guys.
We didn't even get to get into baseball. We're going to have to get into baseball with Gary next year. They just started the first practice yesterday.
Yeah, it was beautiful. It was good stuff. Krainak, enjoy your weekend.
You too. I said, you went?
No, but I had eyes there, so it's okay. Elijah, be good. Enjoy the weekend. We'll be back at you Monday at 4 on Hail Varsity, presented by Currency. Thanks.
A Huda Media Production.